If you zap away from TV commercials, you may be missing the work of Drew Takahashi. He's a San Francisco-based director and designer who's done commercials for Hershey's, Levi's, and for Milk. Takahashi is the co-founder of the design and production company Colossal Pictures. Their clients have included Francis Ford Coppola, Universal Pictures, Hanna-Barbera, RCA, and MasterCard. Takahashi has directed music videos like The Grateful Dead's Touch of Grey and Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy. One of Takahashi's most frequently played recent commercials for Ocean Spray Cran Raspberry features Bobby McFerrin, and if you think it resembles a music video, that's no accident.
It actually was born from a rock video. The first piece I had done with Bobby was a video called Good Lovin'. The album was Bobby overdubbing on himself, you know, four or five times. So I had my talent, and I had to create a visual. I had one guy, and I had five voices. So I played the first half of the video with him and five microphones trying to keep up with doing all the vocals. And later, to his relief, there end up being five Bobbies. When the agency saw that, they just thought it was a... I mean, because of Bobby's character, just thought he was kind of fresh and fun, a good image for Cran Raspberry. So they took the idea, set it on a beach. The question came up whether we should do it on a real beach, and for technical reasons, we actually shot it on a studio, but it actually was my preference anyway, because it was the ability to create a completely artificial environment that just made it, I think, more frivolous.
Can I ask you a technical question? How do you create five different Bobby McFerrins on camera?
I think a lot of the effects that are done these days are utilize a technique called blue screen, where you put somebody against blue. There are technical ways of getting rid of the blue and inserting a background. It's a technique that I hate, and we managed to get around that for both the spot and the video, and went back to kind of the oldest techniques that were used in the early days of filmmaking, which is basically a matte shot, where you kind of shoot the image for one side of the piece of film, and then you shoot another image for the other piece of film. We ended up taking that basic idea and stretched it a little further, doing it on an all-digital editing system. But really, the idea comes from way back in the early 1900s.
Do you think of ads as good places to try out experimental techniques?
It's a good and bad place. I mean, one, the politics of commercials make it extremely difficult to really play. I mean, there are a lot of people with reputations and products at stake, so you can't be too playful. But on the other hand, I think that in people's search for visual differentiation, they're willing to put a lot of money per second into filmmaking. It's money that goes far beyond what you could get in feature films, even the high-budget ones. I mean, you're sitting there, dealing with fractions of seconds and, minor details of art direction. So, yes, because of the budgets, we can often go real far with things. On the other hand, there's the conservative force of responsibility that often keeps it from being a purely creative process.
Mm-hmm. Now, something else you've done a lot of is logos, and I think the first major logo that you did was for MTV. Now, what was your role in the design of the MTV logo?
Well, we didn't design the logo. That came from Manhattan Design. But I remember when we were contacted to do some IDs for MTV. It was before they had gone on air, and they had no idea how they were going to produce these things. And I remember meeting guys in New York, and they said that... they were going to do this channel, and it was all going to be rock and roll promotional videos. And I thought it was a terrible idea, but I thought it would be fun to work on. I had no idea it would turn into what it did. There, let's see. When we first got the logo, it was I thought it was extremely ugly. It was gross. It was so overly bold, and the perspective lines weren't right. And I think after we worked with it a while, we realized what was good about it. The design is so bold that no matter what you do to it, it's always recognizable. And that gave us a great deal of freedom. I mean, there are corporations that have giant, thick books that determine everything that you can do to a logo and things you can't do to a logo. And, its placement, its size, its color, its context. And... here were some guys who were coming to us with a logo and said, you can do anything you want. It's just got to show up there at some point. And so it was real liberating. And they also had such a schedule that allowed us to do anything we wanted with it. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So what were some of the things you did to the logo?
Well, let's see. We scribbled on it. We put French fries on it to make the TV and put ketchup on it. Actually, we did that as a joke. I mean, after shooting the first logo, it was early in the morning, and we had been up all night, and the logo was down there. So we took some funky material, put it behind. There were some cold French fries from the night before laying on a table. So we just animated those in. MTV later took that and bought it, put a soundtrack, and it ran on the air. We've done it in computer graphics. We've done it as models. We've done it where the logo is not really there. I mean, by placing various objects that from a certain point in space, all the objects line up to describe the logo, although the logo is not physically there. We did a generic logo where the logo just sits there and it has a kind of a price code sitting on top, and we got supermarket music.
Did the MTV logos lead to doing other broadcast logos?
Well, I think, you know, for a lot of people in broadcast, when they saw what, you know, Fred and Alan, who were the guys at MTV, had allowed us to do, they realized that the ID no longer had to be a big logo that the camera floats around, that they could be mini stories and could be entertaining, almost kind of like interstitial program material. So later we did some VH1 stuff. We did things for Nickelodeon. Now, those are all part of the MTV family, so that was kind of a natural. But then we were approached by the Disney Channel to work with them. And, you know, they, more than MTV, I think, looked at it almost as a small form of entertainment, that these things could tell little stories, and they allowed us to go longer than 10 seconds. And so we now are allowed to do little 15- and 20-second pieces.
If you had your way, would you be doing commercials, or would you be doing a different kind of movie making?
There's a real frustration working in commercials because everything is so controlled, as it has to be. I mean, you're responsible to a lot of people, and yet at the same time, there's that kind of wonderful amount of attention you can put into a very short film. So I enjoy doing commercials, but at the same time, I would like to have both. Both the freedom to do certain kinds of things and the budget to do intense short films. And, you know, unfortunately, especially in this country, there's really no market. It's often used to fill spaces between feature films and cable channels and whatever. But, you know, short films are very much ignored here. Just a few weeks ago, I was in Annecy, which is an animation festival in France, where, I mean, you just see all this great stuff that people all over the world are doing. Nobody will see it. And to me, that's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm. Your company is based in San Francisco, although recently you opened offices in different parts of the country. Are there advantages to being geographically apart from the rest of the industry?
For us, I think yes. I mean, one is that we were not allowed to really, I mean, we didn't work in all those standard houses where we would have learned certain habits and certain techniques. We were up here by ourselves, I mean, in the early days in my basement, just trying to figure out our own solutions to things. And I think in the end, all the technologies have changed, you know, the tools and the toys, I mean, those things change every year. And yet our approach, which was kind of born out of necessity, is what we continue to have to sell. I mean, just looking at problems and not going for the stock answers and trying to find other ways of achieving the effects we're looking for.
Drew, thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, well, thank you.